Welcome to the Flow Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording. It is 1:06 p.m. that is Pacific Standard Time. Today is at December 20th, and we have seen now that the S&P 500 has been down almost every day for the last 2 weeks. There was just one day on the upside. So we definitely have a short-term oversold condition, but we also have seen some very significant technical deterioration. Certainly, when we look at the market on a daily basis, we can very clearly see that it is trading well below the region of the low we saw in February, that this has been by far the largest decline we've seen in the context of what has effectively been a decade-long advance. The pullback from the peak in that we saw in September, which in fact was really a failed upside break, well, that came right back down and tested the lower side of the range, and now it's broken down. So in order to demonstrate a return to demand dominance here, what we would really need to see is a very clear upward dynamic to signal a failed downside break. We would need to see a higher reaction low, and then the index would need to sustain a move back above the trend mean. So those are big asks. This is basically what we need to see from the market. And there are some rather big things happening out there. Well, some of the things that people are worried about are the trade war. And I would suspect that that's the thing that we need to worry about least. I think that's already in the price. What is not so much in the price and is something that people are starting to get to grips with is that the USA has got a new central banker. And we had a Greenspan put, a Bernanke put, a Yellen put. We do not yet know whether we have a Powell put. And this is, I think, something that is being questioned by the market right now. The Federal Reserve had the opportunity to come to the rescue of the markets yesterday, and they passed up on that opportunity. They said that they're going to raise rates twice next year and that they are not going to dabble with the pace with which they're reducing the size of the balance sheet. Well, that's something that the market has not taken particularly favorably, and that is why we've seen the stock market pulling back so violently in the last couple of days. This is very clear technical deterioration on the S&P 500. If we simply look at the chart, it was beautifully consistent between 2016 and the beginning of 2018. Two full years on the upside where the market did no wrong. The pace of the advance did pick up at the end of last year. I think it's a little bit, it's not quite as large an acceleration that we saw, for example, at the peak on the, in the NASDAQ back in 2000. Because there is, it would be very difficult to make the argument that we've had bubbly characteristics within the broad stock market. Where we have had some bubbly characteristics are in the debt markets. And that's something that I'll speak about again in a moment. But then we also have to say, I think, pay some consideration to the shares that have had incredible moves on the upside and did accelerate. Well, Amazon doubled between the end of 2016 and its peak in the middle of the year. Now it's at a new closing low. It's trading below the trend mean. It hasn't traded below the trend mean for any real perceptible amount of time since 2014. And back in 2014, it was a fraction of where the price is trading today. Now, it could yet bounce from this level. And that would certainly be a comfort to investors. But it needs to do more than bounce. It needs to confirm that it can put in a higher reaction low and that it can sustain a move back above the trend mean. It's only then that we could really conclude we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Because at the moment, this is the biggest pullback we've seen. And that's certainly the case for anyone who's looking at it on an arithmetic scale. So they're potentially the people that are leveraged. Then, of course, you have to think about the people that are unleveraged. But even here, this is the biggest pullback we've seen for Amazon since at least the beginning of 2016. So some people will definitely be looking back at that episode in 2016 and thinking, well, golly, the last time it did something like this, it was a phenomenal buying opportunity. It's only when the buy the dip strategy, which is goes part and parcel with buy and hold, when that stops working, that's when you have clear evidence of supply dominance. And if Amazon breaks down from this range, well, then I think it would be clear evidence that the buy the dip strategy has not worked. And then we're talking about a real big top formation. And Amazon is one of the most owned shares anywhere. And just about everyone I know who has a position in individual shares in the USA owns Amazon. So what happens to Amazon is going to be a big arbiter for what happens to the market. Now, something that is I was thinking about over the course of today. Yesterday, I was talking about the fact that we had some wobbles in the stock market previously, and it was certainly when you get these declines in December, they don't happen particularly often because this is generally speaking the most favorably bullish time of seasonally the most bullish time of the year. And what happens when the market does pull back in December? Well, it pulled back in December in the first week of January in 2016. And it pulled back for most of the period from September through to the end of December in 2012. But then it rallied subsequently on both occasions. But there is another occasion, if we just go back and look at some additional history, where the market pulled back in a violent manner right at the end of the year, and that was in 2007. It was in the last week of the year and the first couple of weeks of 2008 that the market had pulled back. And it then ranged below the peak for approximately 5 months and then failed in the region of the trend mean. So that was very clear topping activity. And then we had a period of right-hand extension, which you might equate with a first step below the peak, and then we had a crash. So we're now let's roll back to where we are today with the S&P 500. We are pulling back below the trend mean. We've done that. Now the market has broken downwards in the last, almost the last week of trading for the year. And obviously we have a very short week next week in terms of trading. Now the big question is what's going to happen on the 1st of January. Now there was an article, I'll post it tomorrow, that I was looking at just before I started recording the audio. And it was to the effect that one of the changes to the tax code has removed the expensing of interest for hedge funds that borrow money to leverage it up. So they need to make profits if they're going to write off their interest. And most hedge funds did not make profits this year. So that means that their interest expense is now a further expense on their business models, which could potentially get shoved onto investors. That also, it could contribute to further liquidations. It could be one of the animating factors behind the speed with which we've seen these prices coming back. But next year's a new year, and performance measures for the new year will get reset. And generally speaking, that is when people start to get a bit more bullish about looking for bargains. But we are going to need to see some very clear advances here in order to question that this isn't a completing top formation on this market. The most important thing that is going on right now is that the total assets on central banks is contracting. Now, this is the measure that I came up with has got two important characteristics. The first is that it composed of the balance sheet of the Federal Reserve, the ECB, the Bank of China, and the Bank of Japan. And then it's currency adjusted. So we can see that today, the fact is that The index has been going up because of the weakness of the dollar. The dollar rallying has been an enormous contractionary effect, has had an enormous contractionary effect on the global liquidity situation, because it is the benchmark against which central bank balance sheets are measured. Then there's a lot of debt that's denominated in US dollars, particularly in the emerging markets. And the dollar has been largely going sideways over the course of the last 6 weeks, and it was down in a reasonably dynamic manner in here today. There is an increasing argument among investors that the dollar should weaken considerably from here. But if the Federal Reserve does indeed go ahead with its balance sheet runoff, that's going to withdraw additional dollars from the market. So that's a bullish factor for the dollar. If the Federal Reserve were to go ahead and raise interest rates twice next year, that would be bullish for the dollar, but I suspect that that is now getting priced out of the market, that it is unlikely that the Federal Reserve is going to raise rates again, regardless of what they said at the press conference yesterday. But it's the size of the balance sheet is, I think, going to be the deciding factor here. If they do continue to reduce the size of the balance sheet, then that should be bullish for the dollar. It would, I think, arrest major declines. But what we have started to see is that when we get any evidence that the dollar is coming under pressure, then it is some of the emerging markets and gold that tend to do best. Gold cruised through the $1,250 area in here today. It didn't quite finish on the high of the day, but it is now back above its trend mean and trending higher within this almost 3-year range. So that is holding out the prospect that we're going to see higher levels here, and that would almost be a guarantee if we see the dollar weakening from here. Then it's also worth highlighting that despite the fact that stock markets were in really rather significant negative territory in here today, the Nifty was in, well, was only down 15, but it was well off its lows. And the Indian rupee, which had been really quite weak over the course of the most of the year until its low in October, strengthened up and is now back testing the region of its trend mean. This has been a rather dynamic move in favor of the rupee in here this week. Then, when we look at Indonesia, the Indonesian market has bounced from the region of its trend mean. And when we look at the rupiah, then it is right in the region of its trend mean as well. So these are markets that are exhibiting really quite clear relative strength. Well, I've been saying for quite some time that I think that the epicenters of risk are China and Europe, whereas it's in the ASEAN sector where we still have the growth of the global consumer and the increasing demand for just about everything. And they're not as heavily levered and they're not really particularly influenced by the big dollar denominated debt issues. So generally speaking, it's been ASEAN has been the clear relative performer here. And when we look at for Thailand, for example, it's right in the region of the upper side of a 5-year range. So this is, or at least the underlying range. So this is an area where we might anticipate support starting to come back in. Then when we look at Vietnam, it was down one point in here today, but it is encountering resistance in the region of the trend mean. Now, the big question here is whether the lows are going to hold. It really does need to sustain a move back above the trend mean in order to really demonstrate that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. But I think the clear relative strength leaders here are India and Indonesia within the ASEAN region. Then we have Brazil. So you have the market continuing to reward Brazil following the election of Bolsonaro. Now the Bovespa was down 400 points in here today, and it is encountering resistance in the region of 90,000. But this doesn't look like anything other than a reversion back towards the mean. And the real, which had weakened all the way back to the lows we saw in 2015, then rallied to unwind its oversold condition, has also steadied up a little in here as well. So I think when we look around the world, that if we simply look at Wall Street, then it would be very difficult to find safe havens here because there has been such concerted selling pressure. But it isn't simply that emerging markets are doing better on a relative basis, but there is evidence that we're seeing clear outperformance on an absolute basis from the emerging markets right now, at least on a selected basis. Well, that's, I think, particularly interesting when we look at the performance of the domestic Chinese market, which was right down on its lows in here today. So I would give the caveat to emerging markets that it is emerging markets ex China that is the real potential here. China has got significant challenges, not least because of the trade war, but because they've been weighing on their own domestic liquidity situation. And that policy is probably going to have to be reversed in order to really demonstrate a return to demand dominance. So we're badly in need of a catalyst to provide additional liquidity. The weakening of the dollar is potentially a catalytic event in terms of emerging markets in particular. What's particularly interesting is that gold and emerging markets have been trading relatively similarly to each other over the course of most of this year. So what's good for one is good for the other, or they've both been affected by the same reason, and that reason has been the strength of the dollar. So the market is now likely to test the Federal Reserve because the market will want to know whether it has a Powell put, and we just don't have evidence of that just yet. So that is an important characteristic. Then when we look at 10-year Treasury yields, it is particularly interesting that against a background where we had a weak stock market in here today, we also had a weak bond market, and the yield was up by about 4 basis points, and it is now right in the region of the lower side of this range that's been forming since February. Well, the big question is it going to be able to sustain a move back above the trend mean? This has been some pretty significant technical deterioration, and it remains to be seen whether we are in a supply-dominated environment for the bond markets. Now, that's, I think, when we look at the stock market, it's oversold in the short term. And I think one of the worst things that one can do is to look at things like the RSI or the stochastics on this occasion, because they work best in a ranging environment. And that's one of the big lessons for when one is using technical indicators. It's knowing when they are most useful. Well, an oscillator is best when a market is oscillating, and that generally means when it's in a range. But what we can, I think, conclude is that the S&P 500 is no longer in a range. The NASDAQ 100, I think, is arguably still in a range. It has not taken out the lows that we saw at the beginning of the year, but it is certainly at a new closing low and down 100 points, just about 100 points in here today. So we definitely have an oversold condition. The market has been down in consecutive days. We're due a bounce. But we still have a succession of lower rally highs, and as long as that is the case, then we're in a supply-dominated environment. Well, I've been doing a little bit of field research. I went out to Costco yesterday evening. The first thing as I was driving into the parking lot that I saw was that there was no queue at the petrol station, and there's usually a massive queue at the petrol station because they have the cheapest gasoline around. And then I went to the storeroom and I asked the guys working there how was business, and they said it was quieter than last year. Well, that's also what the share is telling us. The pace of the advance really did pick up this year, and now we have a massive reaction against the prevailing trend. So this is not bullish action. In fact, we can see clearly that there was an acceleration higher, and that followed a period where it had been trending in a reasonably consistent manner. and in a rather sedate manner, really, since 2015. And now we're seeing a significant drawdown. When we look at, for example, Visa and MasterCard, they have very similar patterns. They trended beautifully, consistently higher, all the way through until the peak in the third quarter. And you can see clearly that the peak was a downside weekly key reversal. Then we had the follow through on the downside. We've had right hand extension, and now it's breaking down. So if this is not a top, then it really needs to bounce and bounce emphatically. Well, how do Visa and MasterCard make money? Well, they're not particularly involved in the lending part of the business, but rather they charge transaction fees. Well, it's the transaction fees is how they generate money. Then you need to have lots of transactions. And if transactions are falling because major retailers are underperforming, well, then that's not good news for transaction kinds of businesses. So that's certainly an issue that we have in here, that some of the kinds of businesses that should be doing well in an expansionary environment are not doing well. Then, when we look at, for example, one of the shares that many value investors have loved to own, then Berkshire Hathaway has lost some uptrend consistency and had a massive downside weekly key reversal 4 weeks ago, and it has now pulled back below the trend mean. Walmart is also pulling back in a rather violent manner and is below its trend mean. The other, on top of the fact that Berkshire Hathaway doesn't really buy back its shares, neither does Amazon, and Amazon is right in the region of its lows. So these are important trend deteriorations that we're seeing. Now, one of the things that has been weighing on Europe is that it has a heavy reliance on the Chinese economy, but it is also heavily reliant, particularly Germany's exports are heavily reliant on exports to of cars to the USA. And the German stock market is deteriorating in a rather big way. Generally speaking, it is the mid-cap sectors tend to be very interest rate sensitive, and the MDAX in Germany is trending down. It's very similar to what we're seeing in the Russell, and the Russell 2000 is also trending downwards. Then, if we spin that out and look internationally, the topic second section in Japan has now broken down below 7,000 and done so in a very dynamic manner. This is a completing top formation, and that's likely to put downward pressure on Japanese assets. Well, part of the reason that it's doing that is because the yen has strengthened up, where if there's some argument about the dollar being strong and whether it would weaken, but the yen tends to strengthen in times of market stress. That's also part of the reason why we've had a bigger move in gold. What's particularly interesting is that treasuries were weaker in here today, and that is a red flag. The fact that you have the treasury market failing to rally against a background where stock markets are pulling back is bad news for risk parity strategies. That also helps to really highlight the fact that risk parity strategies have benefited enormously from the provision of liquidity and the fact that you have had these puts provided by central bankers for much of the last 20 and 30 years. So this is a potentially big problem that asset prices have done enormously well because of liquidity provision, and that liquidity is being withdrawn. Therefore, it's likely to have a bigger impact on asset prices than on the economy, at least initially. And that's what we're seeing. The last few times we've had a correction, we've had a very clear catalyst to point to and say, well, some central bank somewhere has got the global asset markets back. And so far, we don't have that yet. And until we do have that, then this is still going to look like a bearish environment. Then I think If we look at the performance of various currencies, the Australian dollar has begun to steady a little here around the 70 area. If the dollar does continue to weaken, then that will act as a tailwind to not just gold, but also the wider commodity complex. And copper prices have been positive now the last 2 days, bouncing from the 265 cent area on the COMEX contract. Well, it needs to do a bit more than that. It needs to push back above the trend mean and to really, I think, signal that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. The continuous commodity index has been largely range-bound for much of the last few years, and it was in negative territory in here today. Well, the reason it's in negative territory is because oil prices were down another $2.47 in here today. So that is very clearly extending the decline. It's been my view that oil is in a secular bear market. The big question was, at what price would a lot of supply come back into the market? And we know what the answer is now. It's $80. The lower side of the range is between 30 and 40, and there is nothing on the chart other than the fact that it's coming back very swiftly to signal that it's not going to go back down and test those levels. What that suggests is that any producers that cannot survive in this environment are going to get excised from the market, and that is a particularly big problem for a number of the OPEC members. Oil prices could be ranging in a volatile manner, with a peak to trough swing in excess of 100% for the foreseeable future. Well, sorry, it's not a peak to trough swing, it's a trough to peak swing, I think would probably be the more correct way of saying it. So the global liquidity situation is something that is now starting to move front and center. And the thing that really stood out to me at the Fed's meeting yesterday was that they didn't talk about the size of the balance sheet. They just simply said it was on autopilot, and none of the journalists that were asking questions afterwards brought it up at all. What they really wanted to talk about was President Trump and his and whether the Federal Reserve was still independent, which is not nearly as relevant to markets. So this is certainly a period of time where we are seeing market stress starting to evolve, and we're going to need a catalyst to change it. And I think with that, I will leave you for today and wish all the best to all of you.